If you've ever marveled at the playing of a pipe organ and thought, wow, this instrument has been around for a while, well, the story's even longer than you might think. The likes of Johann Sebastian Bach wrote some fine organ music centuries ago, but the instrument itself dates back something like 2 millennia. We'll skip most of the history lesson and get to know a contemporary player of the pipe organ. Aaron Tan is scheduled to play a concert in Ashland a month from today on January 19th, so we get to meet the artist and get to hear some of his work. Aaron Tan is Canadian and highly talented, working as both a musician and an engineer with a PhD in materials science from the University of Michigan. His science research focuses on polymers, plastics, and his musical performances have brought him a paragraph worth of awards, scholarships, and diplomas. Aaron Tan, pleasure to have you on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks. It's such an honor to be here.
And where are you these days? You're studying at Yale, is that right?
Yep, I am in New Haven, Connecticut, but I also work in a church in New York City on the weekends. Yeah.
So are the studies at Yale are in music, not in your science area, right?
Right. This is actually the first music degree I'm getting at a college, at least. And yeah, I'm doing a master's and I'm in my second year here.
Yep. I know I'm not the first person to ask this question, but how have you managed the time commitments in pursuing your PhD while giving concerts?
Yeah, well, I kind of enjoyed both quite a lot, and I would often go into the music school at Michigan to practice for a couple hours early in the morning before going to my lab to do research, and then would spend a couple more hours after the work day and practice a little more. Yeah, so you just kind of budget your time accordingly. Yeah.
And don't watch a lot of TV, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I watched a bit of Netflix here and there too, but maybe not as many. No binge watching. Yeah.
Good. I'm glad to hear you got to get some downtime in there, or some chill time anyway. Now, I read your article from several years ago. I've been getting asked that question about your time a lot, and you wrote then that you don't consider music a hobby.
Right. I think it's, well, at least for me, it's a little more serious than that, in that it's something that is very much a part of my, I feel, a part of my existence, especially these days now that I'm doing it full-time. But even back then, I drew a lot of emotional reward from playing music and performing. And yeah, it was something that was really meaningful to me, more than just a casual activity to pass the time or something like that.
Yeah. Okay, so much, much more dedication and much more importance to you. So I want to get in one of these interviews where we just talk about music and don't hear any. So let's give the audience a little taste of what you're capable of. This is just a short burst of you playing the overture to Wagner's Die Meistersinger.
Mm-hmm.
Portion there again of Wagner's Die Meistersinger Overture. Now this is you alone taking the place of an entire orchestra, and with, if Wagner memory serves correctly, it's usually a large orchestra. How detailed is the music in front of you when you're playing this?
Well, mostly it's condensed to 3 lines of music. So organ music, often most composers will write in 3 lines instead of like 2 lines for the piano. And so it's 2 staves of music for the hands and 1 for the feet or the pedals that we play. And yeah, this particular piece was an arrangement, right, of an orchestral work. And someone in the mid-20th century named Edwin Lemaire arranged it so that organists could take, the place of an orchestra. This was very common, especially in the early 20th century for organists to play even entire, like, Beethoven symphonies on the organ, because that was a lot cheaper than hiring 50 musicians to perform that same piece.
Indeed. You just have one person who gets worked really hard. Now, right. Aaron Tay, you were young when you began playing music in church. How old were you?
Well, I started playing the piano when I was 5 years old, and I started playing for churches maybe when I was 11 or so, but on the piano first, and I didn't really start playing the organ till I was maybe 13 or 14. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I noticed that came later. So do you come from a musical family? Was there always music around you growing up?
No, not really, but the reason I was put on the piano was as a sort of disciplinary way to focus myself. I was a kind of scatterbrained child growing up, I suppose, and my parents wanted me to have an activity where I would sit down and have to, like, concentrate on something seriously. So that was really the reason why I started on the piano. It wasn't to make art or something like that.
Yeah. It was to keep Aaron busy, is what your parents looked
like. Something like that, right. Uh-huh. Yep.
Now, you play violin too, is that right?
I do. I used to very much more regularly than I do now. Although I could, I guess, you know, with a few, several hours, try and scrape something together again. But I still have a violin that I carry around with me sometimes. Yeah.
All right. So many more questions about your musical talents and even some of your work in engineering as we continue this interview. Aaron Tan, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, he'll be playing Sunday, January 19th at 3:00 at the Southern Oregon University Music Recital Hall. I'm looking right at it. It's right outside our window here. It is presented by the Southern Oregon Chapter, the Organist Guild of America, and the Oregon Center for the Arts at SOU. We'll come back and talk more with Aaron Tan, hear more of his music on the organ when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 15. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio, I'm Jeffrey Riley. I thank you for listening, and I invite you to join our conversation as we explore music and some materials science with Aaron Tan, who is versed in both of them. He is a well-recognized organ player. He also plays the piano in concerts and has a PhD in materials science from the University of Michigan, currently studying for his first music degree at Yale University and also spending some time playing music at a church in New York City. You can join our conversation as we talk with Aaron a month away from his appearance in Ashland on January 19th. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So let's see, 5 years old, you were on the piano. You do have some violin as well. You moved to the organ at age 13 or 14. How did the interest in that develop from the piano?
Well, I was actually hired by a church, the Presbyterian Church in the suburbs of Toronto where I grew up, to be their organist, and they had this rather old digital organ as opposed to a pipe organ, which is wind blown. The sound generation is like wind blowing into pipes, but this organ was just made of some computer chips and a speaker, or a couple speakers maybe. But I didn't really know how to play the organ, so I just tried to put on some random sounds and make some noise. And then after a couple of years, I figured maybe I should actually start taking lessons and learn how to use the instrument properly. And that was kind of a life-changing experience. It opened up a whole door of new music that I had never heard of before. And I didn't know that this, like, different realm of sacred music existed. And so I really took to it and switched kind of officially to the organ at around 16 years old, mm-hmm. rather than piano. Yeah.
All right. So at that point, piano was your secondary instrument and didn't get a lot of attention for a few years. But you do still give concerts with piano too, is that right?
Once in a while, I'll maybe program a couple pieces here and there on the piano, just as a contrast. Yeah.
Yeah, we do have a piece that we'll play later on, but right now let's give people another taste of what you're capable of. Now, this is about a 2.5 minute clip of a portion of Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker, and this is the characteristic march. The music of Aaron Tann on the Jefferson Exchange playing Tchaikovsky's characteristic march from the Nutcracker. So a little seasonal music for you there. You know, I was trying to pull apart, Aaron Tann, what's going on there, and I can hear the, you know, dent, da 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 in the right hand, but the left hand and the feet both seem to be doing different things at the same time.
Often in that piece, there's a three-part texture. You have the galloping theme that you hummed along in the right hand, and then the pedal has this kind of pizzicato, like almost like a bass player plucking
away. Bum, 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 bum. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. And then in the left hand, you have this long notes that are slow moving, and they're like the strings that are in the orchestra, just kind of bowing quietly, providing accompaniment. Yeah.
I remember, you know, I've loved organs since I was about 10 myself, and my brother and I, who's a much more accomplished musician than I'll ever be, but we were talking about the chords that we were hearing in some Bach organ works many years ago, and he remarked, like, boy, those are some strange chords. Are the chords actually written differently in organ music, or is it just the sound of the organ that has this sort of layered, sometimes almost dissonant sound?
Well, I think the harmonies that Bach used are pretty standardized for his period, which is the Baroque era, which spanned from the early 1600s to the mid 1700s or so. But yeah, I think the way you get color and different moods often in the organ is to change, the kinds of pipes that you use. And we call this in organ lingo the registration that we use. So Some sounds or pipes are very smooth and mellifluous in nature, while others are much fiercer and almost angry sounding. And depending on the music you play, you can change the timbre or the color that you use, the registration. Yeah.
Now, I noticed that the registration will change over the course of a piece of music. I was watching some of the videos. All the clips we're playing today were downloaded from YouTube and converted. And now, obviously, your feet are going to stay busy on the bass pedals, but you also seem to have some foot stops. So you're busy changing the registration while the piece is going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if you take a look at many modern American instruments or even European ones, you will find that there are all over the place under the keyboards as well as near the pedal board where the feet play. There are all these buttons that are called the pistons in our jargon. And these pistons are used to basically pre-program series or selections of pipes that you want to use and colors, so that when you are playing a piece of music, you can rapidly change the sound or the color of what you are playing. And whenever an organist goes to visit or give a performance on a new instrument, they actually have to spend a couple days before performing and basically set up the instrument in the way that they want for every single piece that they're going to perform. So it's not like a piano where a visiting artist can just sit down and pretty much start playing their piece, which is, barring the differences in the touch of a piano keyboard from keyboard to keyboard, pianos are pretty consistent, but every organ is pretty much unique because of the different space that the organs are in, as well as how large, how many pipes are in an organ. That all changes what sounds and pipes are available, and then so you have to change your pistons accordingly. And in addition, actually, the piston positionings themselves are very different from organ to organ. So it's pretty much like you're playing a new instrument every time.
And the tallest pipes with the real rumbly low notes, they're, 30, 40 feet, some of them?
Yes. So the lowest pedal notes are usually around 32 feet long. Mm-hmm. But at the Woolsey Hall organ at Yale, we do have one pipe that is 64 feet long.
All right, so I can just imagine, though, I would have loved to have seen your face the first time you sat, not an electronic organ, but at a pipe organ, and got to get to hear the full sound of what it was capable of. And what was that like for you?
Yeah, well, it was kind of breathtaking. Yeah, it's a very powerful experience, hearing a nice, full, rich, full organ. Yeah, and it's kind of unforgettable. Yep.
All right. You make it unforgettable for us as well. We're talking to Aaron Tan about playing the pipe organ and other instruments. And he's also, by the way, an engineer with a PhD in materials science. You can join the conversation as we talk with Aaron preparatory to his visit to the Rogue Valley for a concert in Ashland on January 19th at 3 in the afternoon. And our phone number is 800-838-3760. A couple of emails already at jx@jeffnet.org. The first from Becca in Lane County. She says, Mr. Tan is a wonderful organist, and she asks, when did the pipe organ become common in Europe? This beautiful music takes me to scary cathedrals in medieval Europe and dark winters filled with threats real and superstitious. Thanks for that, Becca.
Oh, so shall I answer?
Yes, please.
So I think the organ, it originated actually with the Greeks even before 0 BCE, I guess, and it didn't really enter churches until around the 9th century, I believe. And its purpose was actually more symbolic than liturgical. Like, there was, in the medieval era, this theory or philosophy of, like, people were seeking out harmony of the spheres, like a perfect musical expression or something like that, that the Greeks often talked about too. And they had all these theorems about how there are different intervals that are perfect and some intervals are not perfect. And because of the way that organ pipes are built, it lent very much to this philosophy of musical perfection, because the pipes are actually, the length of the pipes is very proportional to each other. So you can have like an 8-foot long pipe, and then the next octave up would be 4 feet, and then 2 feet. And so there's like all these proportionalities of how long organ pipes are and how like the length of together is related to each other. So they, yeah, the organ started entering the church in around the 9th century, and maybe a couple hundred years later is the first time that it actually became used as a sort of liturgical tool. People would record pieces before and after the service. And it wasn't really till the Reformation that the organ began its common use in church now as accompanying people's singing of hymns. Yeah.
We have another email here from Joy and Talent, who asks, how many hands do you have?
Yeah. Well, you can call it 2.5 or something. 3. No, I don't know.
Right.
two hands and 2 feet. Yep. Uh-huh. But everything's typically going at the same time. Yeah.
All right. Let me actually give a clip of you playing the piano here. We'll just do a brief burst of you playing the Bach Toccata in G minor. That is the sound of Aaron Tan, who is mostly known as an organist these days, but obviously quite a capable piano player as well. Now, honestly, Aaron, I think this is the same piece of music I heard Virgil Fox play in one of his albums at the Fillmore East many years ago.
You know what? You might actually be very close to that. Yeah, so he played this very famous, he made this piece famous, the Jig Fugue.
Right, yeah.
Yes. And that section of the toccata that you played is actually a jig as well, and in the same key of G. Yep. but no, I think they were distinct pieces. This is from his book of keyboard toccata, so this wasn't organ music. But the piece you're thinking of that Virgil did is actually a piece of organ music.
Okay,
but they're both jigs. Yep.
Yeah, I'm glad you knew that. But let me ask you, though, about the difference, though, between playing the organ and playing the piano. I mean, in the piano, you've got the control, the dynamics in your fingers, not in your feet.
Right.
And I
right.
just wonder how different an experience that is for you now.
Yeah, so often I think the piano is somewhat even more challenging than the organ because of that necessity to carefully voice every single note that you play on the piano. Whereas the organ is not as touch-sensitive. Now, on mechanical pipe organs, we call them tracker organs, touch is a factor in how the sound of the pipe, especially how it speaks, the initial speech, and also how the sound stops or the release of the pipe, of the sound. But it's definitely not as sensitive as a piano, and that's probably the number one difference between a piano and an organ. So the way we create dynamic contrast in an organ is through selecting what pipes you use, and then sometimes organs will have pipes that are basically enclosed in a wooden chest or a pipe chamber. And this pipe chamber has a basically like slotted window shades or window panes that you can open and close with another pedal device called an expression pedal. And so you can kind of get dynamics that way.
We had an email here, and I'm looking for it. I just accidentally hit the delete button, so I can't tell you where it's from. But it was a question about whether you've ever heard of the portative organ.
Oh, yes. So portative organs are just kind of what they sound like. They're miniature organs that can easily be moved and transported. They're often used in orchestra settings that you have an organist that is accompanying a choir or like a concerto or something like that. Yeah.
All right. So small portable pipe organ. That's good to know. Thanks for the question. I'm sorry that I deleted your name before we got to it. We'll come back and talk more with Aaron Tan. We have more of his music to hear as well. He'll be playing in Medford. He'll be arriving in Medford probably, but playing at the Southern Oregon University Music Recital Hall Sunday, January 19th at 3 p.m. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with Aaron Tan and you in a minute 10. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest is Aaron Tan, who is a Canadian organist now living and studying at Yale University in New Haven, also playing the organ at a church in New York, coming to Southern Oregon for a concert in a month presented by the Organists Guild of America and the Oregon Center for the Arts at SOU. That's Sunday, January 19th at 3 at the Southern Oregon University Music Recital Hall. You can join our conversation right now on the Exchange as we explore the player and what he plays. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. You know, obviously what I assume is a highly analytical mind for you to get a PhD in materials science, I could see how you or any organ player could get caught up in the process of playing the organ, particularly when you know all of the workings of the organ so well. I saw what you wrote in 2013 about going through a period where you felt like you were playing without much joy or inspiration. What changed that? What turned that around for you, Aaron?
Well, actually, it was going back to playing the piano again. I think I was maybe caught up too much in the mechanics of playing the organ. Too many buttons to press and too many keyboards to manage and that kind of thing. But playing the piano kind of took away all that and kind of reminded me of the heart of what is making music. And I returned to playing the piano around 2012 and did that almost more than playing the organ for a couple years. And that really was life-changing and inspiring for me. And I still think of a lot of things about what playing the piano is like when I'm playing the organ these days.
You mentioned the mechanics, though. I mean, there's so much going on with the pipe organ. We talked about the pistons that set your registration. You have all the series of stops that you can pull to get different sounds, use different pipes in the pipe organ. I imagine a lot of things can go wrong. So, I mean, have you ever been sitting there playing a pipe organ and you heard something go out of the air pump or something and there's clanking or clattering or something?
Oh, yes. There are so many mechanical problems that can happen during a concert. Like a pipe, air can start leaking forever into a pipe, which we call a cipher, and that causes this one monotonous sound to happen. And basically, if that happens, you kind of sometimes have to just stop the program and get a mechanic to fix it. And other times you might just hit a wrong piston button and, well, during a lyrical soft piece, then you suddenly get this massive full organ sound, which you never intended. So, yeah, many things can go wrong, and we try to our best, both performers and organ technicians, to get the instrument ready enough and ourselves ready enough to avoid these hiccups. Yeah.
Let me play another piece here. This is Bizet, L'Arlésienne. My French is not very good. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that even close.
Yeah, you got it right. Yep.
Okay, so it's a suite too. Let's hear the whole thing, about 3.5 minutes. Aaron Tan wowing the crowd with his version of Bizet's L'Arlésienne Suite number 2. So you basically have different melodies going on in both hands for a while there, don't you, at the end?
Yeah, right. It's a duet with the March of the Kings and then this French folk song that's the fast, dancey part. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's pretty amazing. So, do you have a dominant hand? I mean, are you officially left-handed or right-handed?
I'm a lefty, but I think my right hand is a little more virtuosic in a way. Yeah, because the right hand plays more of the fast notes, and the left hand is more accompanimental.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I'm curious about a bunch of different things about the actual operation of the organ. For one thing, what kind of shoes do you wear when you have to be able to feel the bass pedals and the pistons as well?
Right. So we have something similar to dance shoes, which are suede bottomed and very almost slippery. Yeah, because often you need to slide from one pedal note to the next, and this allows you to do that, while rubber normal walking shoes or dress shoes even would be a little more challenging to do that. And then the other unique thing that organ shoes have are heels. So the heels allow an organist to play both with the toe as well as the heel and alternate. So like we have five fingers in on our hands, because we can't play with all five toes, that's a little too finicky. We at least have two choices. We can play toe or heel.
So like you'll have a D bass under your left foot and then reach over and get the C right after it?
That's right. And sometimes you can do toe and heel like that, or you can just do toe and then slide with keeping it on the toe. Yeah.
Do you do arpeggios? Do you ever go across the... I mean, is there any piece of music that calls for that across the bass pedals?
Occasionally. I don't think arpeggios would be very easy, though, for the pedals, even if you practice quite a bit.
I think I meant glissando. I'm not really trained in music.
Oh, glissandos, yes. Yeah, that's like sliding, like doing a scale on the pedal just with one foot. Yeah, I've done that before. I actually think I did that in the first excerpt you did of the Wagner Die Meistersinger Overture. There was a moment where there was a glissando in the pedals.
Okay, I wasn't sure if that was coming from your hands or feet, but that answers the question for that part now. So, Aaron Tan, this is more than music for your own pleasure, you point out on your website. I mean, talk about what playing sacred music does for you and what you hope it does for your listeners.
Well, yeah, I often quote in, or I say to audiences that I hope at least one piece on the programs I play is something that's moving and touches people's hearts and souls, because that's really what happened to me a long time ago and what keeps me going and practicing hard to try and bring this. It's almost like a mystical experience to the listener, and I know it's happened because it's happened to me personally. So I think music can be transformative, and I hope that, yeah, through my work, someone else can experience the same joy and beauty that I experienced.
As far as transformative, we have an email here from Paul on Sterling Creek, who I know is a writer in the area. He says, after trying to write at home yesterday while listening to the mind-numbing impeachment hearing, today's wonderful pipe organ music is so thrilling as well as apropos. So you've given somebody a better day than they had yesterday already with the organ music.
I'm very glad to hear that. Yep.
Aaron, is there a different set of emotions or thoughts that come to you or out of you depending upon which instrument you're playing?
Wow, that's a tough question. I think there are definitely different kinds of organs and many different schools, just like there are different kinds of music. And some organs are more fit to play music of Bach, while other organs are more fit to play music of Elgar and Vidor, the great Romantic composers. But I think at the core of it, we are, at least I am, searching for something that speaks to people, that is a lot. Many of my teachers have said that any instrument or keyboard or violin or something like that is really an approach to really what the first instrument was that we were given, which is the voice. And so I think in any piece, we try to find moments where it is like we're singing. We're trying to play like we sing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, be lyrical. Yeah.
If each organ is so different, do you get the specs on the model of the organ and its construction before you choose the program that you'll play on it?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So every time I'm invited to a concert, I first have to request or be given the pipes that are available, the specs, the spec list. And then from there, I can determine which pieces might work or be more difficult, as well as the specs don't just include the pipes, but also which pipes are enclosed in those pipe chambers, mm-hmm. which allows for more expression, as well as the number of pistons, those pre-programmed buttons that are available to change your sounds and registrations. And also it giving information about the builder of the instrument, too, that tells a performer a lot about what music would work best for that instrument.
Wow. So have you chosen the program for next month in Ashland?
I have, yes. And it's actually quite a varied program. This is a very versatile instrument. So there will be everything from Bach to... I think the most modern piece is by a living Canadian, French-Canadian composer named Rachelle Laurent. And she just visited Yale a few weeks ago and gave a beautiful program there as well.
Wow. I can't wait to hear this. This is going to be in a month. It's Sunday, January 19th at 3 at the Southern Oregon University Music Recital Hall. Aaron Tan playing the organ at SOU, brought here by the Organists Guild of America and the Oregon Center for the Arts at SOU. Thanks so much for the visit. We look forward to hearing from you.
Thank you.
Take care. That will do it.
All right.
That'll do it for The Exchange today. We're online at jeffexchange.org, also on social media, Facebook and Twitter at Jeff Exchange. Our program is produced by John Baxter and Angela Decker of JPR News, student assistant Randy Babbitt at the controls today. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. Please join us next time and have a great day.